The 100 has been a game changer for English women's cricket. Matchday attendance has often approached or even exceeded 10,000. I'm Jay Dansinghani and you're listening to the All Over Cricket podcast. Visit us at allovercrick.com, follow us at All Over Crick on Twitter and Facebook. On this episode, we're joined by our first ever recurring guest, Radha Lath Gupta, to discuss the impact of the 100 on English women's cricket and the performance of the five Indian players taking part in it. Without further ado, let's jump in to the podcast. Welcome to another episode of the All Over Cricket Podcast. I'm your host, Jay Dansinghani, and our guest this week, our first ever recurring guest, Radha Lath Gupta. Welcome back to the AOC Podcast.
Thank you. What an honor. I'm going to, you know, put this up on my softboard in my room. First ever recurring guest of the AOC Podcast. Feels awesome. Thank you for calling me back.
And you're back with a brand new fancy blue Yeti mic as well. They should probably pay us for plugging their product, but wow, that's an amazing mic.
Yeah, thank you. I got it just for this recording. I think I had to step up my game. And yeah, of course, it's quite an expensive one. So I've considered it as a big investment, taking good care of it. I pack it away after every recording. But yeah, I've been doing so many podcast episodes and things like that. I thought it was time to kind of elevate my game a little bit.
You know, jokes aside, it's great to have you back on, especially with the 100. I mean, what a tournament it's been. I don't think anyone would have expected it to take off in the way it has, especially in the women's competition. The men's competition, I'll be honest, I haven't really been watching it that
much. Yeah, likewise.
But yeah, I mean, for the women's game, on the back of the 41 regional retainer contracts being handed out in the 8 different regions of England. We talked about this on the last podcast. On the back of that, you know, to have this competition given the same sort of platform as the men, and, you know, just from a business standpoint as well, you're cross-selling the women's 100, you're cross-selling that competition with the men's competition, same team, same uniforms. You know, what have been your impressions so far of the women's competition in the 100?
Yeah, it's sort of been the dream domestic league or the dream franchise league that you want, where you cross sell. That's so important because whatever has happened, the men have been marketed more and more revenue comes in from that end. So how do you bring the women up to par is you play them alongside the men, right? You same uniform, same franchise, same marketing, exactly as you've mentioned. It's been fantastic. I think one small miss has been that they are still referring to the men's tournament as the 100 and the women's as the 100 women, which again, small lingo makes a big difference, goes a long way. Hopefully they rectify that the next time around. But, you know, I've again been religiously following the 100 women's competition. It's been fantastic. So lovely to see the Indians there, you know, dispersed in 5 different teams, really contributing to the team when it matters. I'm sure we'll get in depth in that conversation as well. But I'd love to see how, if something happens, if there's an injury, if someone pulls out, there are always replacements. You know, they've got everything ready. They've got people, they've got players from Ireland, from Scotland, all ready to jump in, to step in. That means they are on the lookout. They've got, you know, they're not just like, okay, you know, here are our superstars and that's it. We'll work with them. It seems to be a larger effort in improving and increasing the number of girls that play cricket in the UK, which is fantastic. It's been broadcasted really well. The graphics are a little bit, you know, people were a little upset with it on the first day, where the wickets are on one end, the runs are on one end. Explaining that to a newcomer is a little bit difficult, but I think everyone settled in. And I think it's safe to say that a lot of people who didn't follow cricket are now watching the 100, and that was the aim of the 100 initially. So yeah, it seems to be a success.
Yeah, no doubt. Really good point there about bringing new fans to the game. That was one of the unique selling points that they were banking on prior to the tournament. And it looks like it's actually working. I think a big thing behind that has been free-to-air cricket coverage. You know, if you want new fans, you can't expect them
to pay for something that they don't have any experience with, they've never seen before. So yeah. To have that on free to air, it's just been an absolute game changer for women's cricket in England. But like you said, I think it's about time we jump into the main point of our podcast today, Indians in the 100. So, I mean, it makes most sense to start with arguably the player of the tournament so far. I'm talking about someone who scored 248 runs in six innings at a strike rate of 154 or 1.54 runs per ball, including three half centuries. I'm talking, of course, of Jemmy Rodrigues. Just tell us a little bit about, you know, your impressions of Jemmy Rodrigues in this tournament and how, you know, it's actually been a massive redemption for her.
Yes.
Showing the India selectors. You can't just leave me out. Showing Harmanpreet Kaur, showing Mithali Raj, you can't just leave me out of your white ball plans.
It's incredible. I just had goosebumps when he said that. But because there was so much pressure on Jemmy Rodrigues coming into this 100 competition, I can't even talk about how much pressure there was. She was sitting on the bench for an entire month in England as the team, you know, went out, played versus England, lost a lot of matches as well. And yeah, I mean, confidence, it really hits you. You know, if you're underconfident and you're not playing, you're not in form, everything snowballs into the other. And then you have this really underconfident youngster sitting on the bench. And then you're thrown into this new competition, new format. I feel like the 100 is such a new age version of cricket. It's sort of like if Jemmy was a tournament, she would be the 100, right? In terms of, it's really cool. You've got music all around. You know, your toss is not always on the field. Jemmy was in the comms box as well. They've got great media marketing coming out of it, content on Jemmy and Laura Woolworth playing the guitar together. It seems to be the kind of environment that Jemmy would thrive in. And we've seen that, you know, just incredible the way she single-handedly carried that innings, that 92 not out. That was, I mean, I think I only watched for half an hour and I watched bulk of her run-making spree, which tells you how quickly she was making the runs. And yeah, I think for Jemmy, this has been the perfect thing, coming at the perfect time and a tournament that complements her cricketing style and her personality. You know, it was a gem to watch her in this entire 1 month span. Yeah, only good things to say and great news heading into the Australia tour that we're going to have. I mean, an Indian, a youngster like Jemmy, who not just, if her confidence is up, it's not just her own form, but it's the team's form as well. You know, she's just infectious. Her energy is infectious. It's electric almost. And to see that girl just come from a place of low confidence to where she is now, only a big player with big mentality, with decent amount of experience can do that. Just to see her do that at 21, there's a bright future ahead. And I'm so pleased with the way she played for the Northern Superstars.
You make some really good points there. If Jemmy Rodrigues was a tournament, she would be the 100. Absolutely no doubt about that. And, you know, it's also worth mentioning that 91-92 not out, that's the highest score by anyone in the tournament so far, whether we're talking about the men's competition or the women's competition. And in 100 ball cricket, to get a score of around 90, and let's remember that she was walking in at number 3. She didn't even open in that game. That has to be one of the best innings I've seen from Jemmy Rodrigues so far. I think my next question is, with the Australia tour coming up, obviously you're going to have Shefali and Smriti up at the top of the order. Now, the thing is with Jemmy, especially with the likes of Harmanpreet Kaur and Deepti Sharma coming in at around 4, 5, 6, depending on, of course, where Richa Ghosh bats as well, would you have Jemmy Rodrigues in at number 3? Or do you think that makes India a little bit too, I guess, top heavy?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think we might be approaching that stage in Indian women's cricket where if you're in form and we think that you can play really well versus this opposition, you'll be put in. So I don't think now we can sit and say that, you know, they're in, she's in for sure. So then where does Jemmy fit in? I think if Shefali has a couple of off games, Jemmy will replace her. It's become that kind of a team where we have a little bit of depth, in the sense that you have to fight for your place. And Jemmy faced the rough end of that, where she tried to fight for her place, but she was just pushed out because she didn't have a great form. She wasn't in good touch. But I think if she's able to displace someone who we might assume is within the 11, and, you know, if the selectors and the captains take a little bit of a new approach, saying that let's, you know, give Merit a chance right now, not say that, okay, she has played well, she can play well, but if she is playing well, she will play well, that kind of a thing. So I'm hoping to see a little more of that. It's a good question that where does she fit in? We've had this problem of being top heavy, and then suddenly we're three wickets down and we're like, oh my God, what's going to happen now? I don't think Jemmy is suited to play a in at five, in at six kind of role. I think she does better when she's kind of setting up the lower order batters. So I would see her in the top four. Harman is injured. She's been out of form, but again, she's the captain, so she would not be out. In case she is out, that sort of opens up the slot for Jemmy, and we might see that happen. But yeah, we wait to see what takes place. But I feel like I personally would like to see Merit being rewarded more than past, you know, history or possibilities, that kind of thing.
Yeah, you make a good point. And one thing I would add to that is, whether, you know, whether she's batting at number three or number four. In fact, I'm going to backtrack. I think she's got to bat at number three. The simple reason being is, in this tournament, we have seen that she's excelled with the license to take advantage of the fielding restrictions, right? She did really well. She scored that 90 odd at number three, and then she was brought to the top of the order. And maybe this is not the best example to prove my point, but in her last innings as well, I can't remember who the bowler was, but she charged at this bowler and she was outstumped. But I have no problem with that inside the first 25 balls, inside the power play. I have absolutely no issues with that whatsoever. So I think India need to go with her at number three. Obviously, you have Shefali and Smriti Mandhana up at the top of the order, but you have to keep that momentum going. The only other alternative I see two, actually. Maybe have Richa Ghosh come in at number three, just see what happens. Just give her a chance to take advantage of the power play. That's one of the things I've really wanted to see.
We haven't seen that yet.
Yeah, it's just one of those things. Like, just try it out in a bilateral series, see what happens. We kind of already know what we're going to get from Jemmy Rodriguez. We know that if Harman walks in at three, she's going to take her time to get set. And that's not something, you don't want someone coming in to the power play and getting a 6 off 12. It sucks all the momentum out of your innings. So you could go very left field and have someone like Richa Ghosh come in at number three. Or you could just say, hey, you know what, Jemmy? Why don't you play the same role that you play in the 100? Here's the license to just be yourself. See ball, hit ball.
Hit ball.
Right? So I think that that's the way India should be going with Jemmy. And there's often this misconception that the see ball, hit ball is this agricultural slogging attitude.
Yeah.
But that's not the case with Jemmy Rodriguez. Her most productive shots, she's still holding her shape, you know, especially when she goes over the offside. It's great to watch. And it's also not as high risk as someone like Shefali, for example. You know, so Jemmy Rodriguez, she has her own game. And it's just great to see at the Northern Superchargers, she's being given the license to just be herself, both off the field and obviously on the field.
I mean, I completely agree. Again, I think if any player would fit into this tournament, like, you know, a glove fits a hand, it has been Jemmy. We've seen that. I would have even probably predicted that it would be Jemmy, just because of the vibe of this tournament and all the vacuum of runs that, you know, she was facing leading up to this. And yeah, I completely agree. You know, she see ball, hit ball isn't a case of I'm just going to go wild. It's a case of all my focus is on the next ball, and that's all I think about. And then after that ball's over, everything in the world doesn't matter to me. The only thing that matters to me is the next delivery. And Jemmy has that kind of mindset. She just goes into the zone and she plays a lot of shots along the ground. So again, not high risk, but it is high reward if because, you know, she always pierces the gap, as we've seen. So, yeah, really, really looking forward to a good international series for her. We've seen her perform in the franchise league now, but it's time for her to perform in blue as well.
Absolutely. And I know we risk turning this into a Jemmy Rodriguez appreciation podcast, but I think we have to point out how amazing she is behind square on the offside, just guiding the ball down, using the pace of the bowler. It's, well, I'm struggling to think of a comparison, but the best comparison I can think of is with the man himself, Sachin Tendulkar. She's amazing at doing that. And just the way she keeps the scoreboard ticking like that.
Yeah.
And just all that range through the offside, going inside out, guiding the ball down. She's hitting in front of the wicket, behind the wicket. Absolutely incredible to watch.
I mean, we could go on and on. I think, you know, we'd love to do that as well. But yeah, look, Jemmy is an absolute class talent. And this is almost like an appeal. You know, when I watch these matches in the 100, when I watch the Indians do well, at the back of my mind, I'm just thinking like, this is almost like an appeal or like a cry for help to the BCCI, saying that, look at this. This is just five of us in a foreign land playing with players we've never played before. This is what we're up to. Like, hello, look here. Like, I feel just so helpless, but this is what it is. And we just need this. I think, you know, maybe barring Harman, every Indian has played a match-winning knock for their team. And, you know, Jemmy's probably done it on multiple occasions. Deepti Sharma has been really good with the ball as well. So I think this is, if this isn't proof, if this isn't, you know, everything you need, I just don't know what is. It's been fantastic display of what is, what women's IPL could potentially bring to our home turf. It, you know, it's really exciting. But yeah, look, I think like, you know, I feel more than just a little, like when the Indians do well, I feel really happy, but I feel a little bit extra joy knowing that it's sort of like a, I told you so kind of moment to the BCCI and the people who aren't giving them the league that they deserve, saying, you know, this is what we can do and we're doing that. So bring the tournament back home and we'll do that there as well.
I'm not completely surprised that we've taken a small segue into discussing the women's IPL. It just had to happen. It was a matter of when and not if. But yep. Right. No, I mean, I certainly hear what you're saying. There's always this hope that the right people, the people in power, are watching and they see that this is such a good time to launch a women's IPL. Actually, a good time would have been, I don't know, maybe 5 or 6 years ago, actually. Yep. Certainly in the aftermath of the 2017 World Cup final, it would have been an absolutely perfect time to launch the women's IPL. But I mean, absolutely, 100%. I completely agree. We need a women's IPL. I mean, you look at what it's done to the development of so many English players and even the uncapped ones, the likes of Emma Lamb. We've seen her get into some form later in the tournament. And of course, Maya Bouchier as well, who also plays for the Southern Brave. Someone like Sophia Dunkley, relatively new to international cricket. I believe now she's second from the top on the run scorers list. I think she's got 244 runs. You know, she's been absolutely incredible. Fantastic. You have people on the fringes or people who haven't played for England for 2 or 3 years, the likes of Kirsty Gordon, Lindsay Smith. You know, they're stepping up and they're doing just as well as the overseas players and as just as well as English, you know, England capped players as well. So it's hard to understand why we still don't have a women's IPL. And you know what, let's dedicate a quick 2 or 3 minutes. You know, let's take another segue. So right before this podcast, I was on Twitter and I think it was the account We Burn Blue. So right now, India's women are quarantining prior to Australia's tour. They are about to quarantine. If this was the men's team, we'd have all kinds of pictures of, I don't know, Rishabh Pant stretching his quadriceps or something like that. You know, you'd have a 30-second video of Rishabh Pant stretching his quadriceps ahead of a tour that's 3 weeks away. And there's just been no hype at all from the BCCI Women's Twitter account, who often go 7 days, 10 days without posting a single thing. I don't even know what my question is at this point, but why? Like, what are they thinking?
Yeah, I mean, there's a running joke on Twitter that the BCCI women's account is only active when there's a birthday. So whenever there's a player's birthday, everyone starts tagging BCCI women and say, you know, hey, what's up? It's Deepthi's birthday. Where are you at? That kind of thing. And, you know, you're absolutely right. Again, it takes me back to when both teams flew to England a couple of months ago. They went on the same plane and suddenly we saw pictures of like Rohit Sharma and Poonam Yadav sitting together and we were like, oh, what's happening here? But post that, post the sort of quarantine and division of the teams, we didn't see too much of the women's content. We saw KL Rahul sipping coffee in the balcony. We didn't see too much of the women's content. You know, we saw all sorts of stuff, but again, we didn't see too much of the women's content. And we've come back to the same, you know, it's just back to square one where the women have pulled out of the 100 at a crucial stage. I mean, no, like, Smriti Mandhana is gone, Harmanpreet is gone. So we've got players who Indians were watching and suddenly they aren't watching them because they're quarantining or preparing for an international tour, some international duty. And we've got no clue where they are. I don't know what they're up to. And yeah, you know, I don't even know if the team account is going to be active on birthdays anymore. I think they were just active when Deepthi Sharma rang the bell at Lord's. That was one tweet and they were like, okay, bye-bye. We'll see you in September. But look, yeah, if you don't market them, if you don't make them visible, how will people see them? How will people buy tickets? Or how will people know that the Indian women play cricket? It's just, it's logic. It's nothing else. It's just common sense. And then you don't market them and you say, well, nobody knows about them. Do you see the flaw there? I mean, I think this is just a segue rant, which is much needed in any Indian women's cricket podcast. But yeah, look, it's again, there seems to be no logic behind it. There seems to be no rational justification that we can arrive at to say that why aren't they? It doesn't cost anything to put out tweets every day. What even? Like, we're not asking you to print billboards and stick them on public buses or something. We're asking you to do something simple. People are always on their phones. A tweet, a retweet, anything is what you need to get it out to that audience. It's so easy to appeal to the masses now at zero cost. It's really time we start doing that.
No doubt. I couldn't agree more. I feel like that's been a common theme in this podcast. I say something, you say you agree with me, you say something, I agree with you. So, but let's keep it moving. We've already talked about Jemmy. Let's talk about the other four Indians in the competition. A logical next step would be Smriti Mandhana. Just reading out her stats, she's got 167 runs in seven innings at a strike rate of 133 or, you know, a runs per ball of 1.34 rounded up, and two half centuries. She's had a pretty decent 100 competition as well. And I just have to say, if I am building a T20 team or a franchise, I'll probably give you two or three names. I'll give you two names that I definitely am going after. One is Alyssa Healy, who wasn't available for this competition. And the second, just in the spirit of consistency, and you just know what you're going to get from her, Smriti Mandhana.
Yeah, I think if you take a little bit of a step out and you look at the performance of the Southern Brave, they've pulled away from the pack when it comes to the table. So clearly, you know, the players in there, their chemistry is great. They've been working really well together. And Smriti has been a part of that team consistently. You said she's played seven matches. She's made 150, 160 odd runs. Again, not a performance. Now that we have a Jemmy-like tournament, everything in comparison looks like, okay, you know, average. Didn't do too well, didn't do too great. But again, looking at Smriti's performance, not a lot of runs in the England series as well. Coming to this, she's again played with the Western Storm in England before. She has a little more experience playing in green in England, as we've mentioned. She's played with a bunch of the players in the team as well. And yeah, I think she had one, you know, superior match-winning knock. But other than that, she sort of gotten starts and then gotten out. Looking at it as a whole, still a decent performance in terms of, oh, look where your team is. I think that's the main priority for any player at the end of the day is where my team is at. Her team's doing fantastic. What can she do better? I think obviously converting starts is a big one. Maybe the new format took a while to settle in terms of five ball overs instead of six ball overs, 25 ball power play, all that kind of stuff. It takes, you know, as a viewer, we're like, oh my God, exciting. But as a player, it's like, okay, wait, do I run? Do I not run? Are we crossing? Like, it is a little bit, confusing. It takes a while to settle in. So I think for Smriti, she'll be happy to have this as her opening tournament in the 100, coming back next year, hopefully with a few more Indians around her as well. That'll be nice to see. But I think, yeah, for Smriti, she won't be terribly disappointed. But of course, with Smriti, there always is the potential to just do what she can, what peak Smriti can. Maybe she's saving that for the Australia series. That's what we hope. But yeah, she'll be happy with the performance as well.
Yeah, no doubt. And once again, just like she does with India, she's got a more dominant partner at the other end. With India, of course, is Shefali Varma. And this season, it's been Danny Wyatt, absolutely fantastic at the top of the order. And it's just interesting to see Smriti, you know, I would say from 27 to around mid-2018, 2019, she was always India's powerhouse at the top of the order. You know, when you think Smriti Mandhana, you think someone who's coming at me from ball one. Mm-hmm. And it's just interesting to see in the last year and a half or 2 years, even in franchise cricket, she's now gone from always being in third gear right from ball one to being that supporting act, for lack of a better word, and almost in gear two. And it's been very interesting to see how she's taken on a new role, both with India and now with the Southern Brave. But, you know, just moving on as well, we still have three other players to cover. Someone like Shefali Varma. So very similar run tally in the 100, 163 in as many innings, seven innings as Smriti. Strike rate around the same, you know, striking at 1.39 runs per ball. But those statistics are a little offset by her innings against the Welsh Fire. I believe she got 76 in that game. Brilliant innings. But, you know, let's be honest, the Welsh Fire, they are the weakest bowling team and quite possibly the weakest team in the tournament. You know, so what do you make of the competition that Shefali Varma has had so far?
Yeah, fair point. I think we look at everything as a whole, and the Welsh Fire were potentially the team that everyone did the best against, and we saw the same with Shefali. I think in that they were chasing, if I'm not wrong, and her partner at the other end as well was striking it really well. So you know, she Shefali was on 76 odd runs, and then suddenly the partner went up to 50 not out as well. So she had like great tandem towards the later half of the chase, which we have not. I can't recall Shefali being there at the later half of a chase, maybe once versus South Africa, but it's been a while. So that as a whole, great to see. Shefali staying not out in a chase, that is my dream. That is everything that I want in life, right? And she did it once. I was hoping she'd do it a little more. I think versus Trent Rockets, Catherine Brunt won the battle every single time. I don't know what was happening there. You know, I think Shefali has grown a little bit in terms of the mind games, but at the end of the day, if you're not making runs versus the person, you know, they're winning the battle. And again, that's something we love to see. We love to see matchups and banter on the field. But look, I think Shefali, again, with the promise that she has, underperformed a little bit just because she peaked versus the team that was probably on its knees and couldn't perform for her team versus teams that were attacking and putting a little more pressure on her. But again, all of this at 17, 18, a learning curve for her. We say this, I mean, again, when she plays well, I go like, wow, she's 17, she's doing so well. When she's not playing well, I say it's a learning curve. But I think all of this is just mixed into one big experience, that is playing cricket at the highest level, which is, you know, you'll do well with the experiences that you get, and you'll also learn a lot with the experiences that you get. And this tournament has been one massive experience for Shefali. I don't think she's been outside of India for so long in a team with no other Indians around her. I think, yeah, it's been something that we'll definitely see mold into her cricketing personality, into her character, come further international series. Could have performed a little more for her team, but I think overall, for a newbie with all the odds stacked against her, not too shabby.
Yeah, I mean, we keep coming back to this with Shefali Varma. It's easy to forget exactly how young she is. And yeah. I actually can't remember whether she's 16 or 17. I'm sure the BCCI Women's Twitter account will know yes. how old she is when she was born.
That's the one thing they'll know, hopefully.
But, you know, just I think the best comparison we can make is Smriti Mandhana prior to the 2017 World Cup. I think it was yeah. the 2016 BBL season or maybe the season before that. If memory serves me right, she was playing for the Hobart Hurricanes. She had an absolutely horrible season. Something
yeah.
like
yeah.
90 runs in 10 innings or something like that. Don't quote me on this, but it just wasn't a good season, whatever way you look at it. And I don't need to tell anyone, I don't need to tell the listeners exactly how good Smriti Mandhana is, right? But Smriti, in the aftermath of that 100 that she got against England in the opening fixture of the 2017 World Cup, she said it was just fantastic being around a professional environment, you know, being away from home. It wasn't easy, right? But it was such a great learning curve to have access to professional strength and conditioning staff as well. And just being around that pro setup, it was transformative for her game. And I just wonder if, you know, we're going to see the same thing with Shefali. She's had a better 100 than Smriti had a WBBL way back when.
Yeah.
There's no doubt about that. You know,
yeah.
So this, she's still young, right? She's played two good innings. There was that 70 odd. And then I think she got maybe a 48 or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And you're right. She's actually never batted past the 16th over in a T20 international before. So she's not someone who actually takes it very deep, you know?
Yeah.
So I guess that was an encouraging sign against the Welsh Fire, the fact that she did finish the job. But, you know, just going off what you said, she hasn't been away from home on such a long tour for such a long time. So now you have England, you've had the 100, you've had the England tour, the England series and the 100. And now she's going to be going straight to Australia. What do you make of that? Is there maybe a argument that, okay, you know what, let's fly Shefali back home to India. Let's give her some time off, right? And maybe she can join in the Australia tour maybe halfway through. Because let's remember, she might just play the WBBL afterwards as well.
I think there will always be that argument. I don't think we've even experienced handling 17-year-olds at such an extent that we know what is right for them, what isn't. It's still a very new thing for India as well to have a 17-year-old, you know, woman just flying around, playing all sorts of tournaments. Percy, I think, as you mentioned, Smriti was saying, facilities helped her out. BCCI, if you're listening, good facilities will always help our cricketers out, you know, wherever they are. Experiences will always help them out. And I think for Shefali, at this state in her life, she has the energy, she has the confidence, you know, to hop from tournament to tournament, country to country. Obviously, a relief in terms of going back home for a while, being with family is always great. But I feel like if going back home means missing out a few Australia matches, I would think she would also want to just go to Australia, because maybe when you're 28 or 30, you want that relief. You'd say, you know, my body needs a break. But at 17, you know, you're golden. If she's fit, if she's fine, if she's feeling great, head over to Australia. I think a lot of the Australians pulled out of the 100. A lot of the New Zealanders pulled out of the 100 just because of the quarantine coming back and forth. It was a toll on the body. And I think if Shefali can manage that mentally and physically, it'll be awesome to have her straight there at Australia. She'd, I think, also be eager to get back to her Indian teammates. That is also a sort of family type relief for the young players, right? If you can't meet your actual family, meeting your Indian teammates is very, very similar, I'd feel. And being in this all English team, you know, the setup is a little bit intimidating if you're not very confident in English, never been out to a country playing alone in a team. So coming back to your Indian teammates would feel special, I think. So I think maybe towards a couple of years later, when she's had the experience of hopping from tournament to tournament to series, then she can say, you know, I need a series off. I need a little bit of a break. But I think as of this moment, we need her. Sorry, that's Harry, our adopted cat, named after Harmanpreet, by the way.
Really?
Yeah. We adopted her and she's a girl. So we decided to name her Harry. Harry, show yourself. Here she is.
Hey, Harry. How's it going?
Hey, say hi to Jay. But she's very cute. She's always on the table, comes in the middle of all my recordings. But yeah, very, very special. Harmanpreet, little Harry in our house.
Wow. Oh my God. Now I can say I had Radha and Harmanpreet on the podcast.
There you go.
Oh, I'll probably get pulled up for false marketing there. But yeah. No, you know what? You make a good point. And I guess it's been a very long time since I was last 17 years old. But I guess you're right. When you're that young, you just want to play as much as possible, right? So I just hope that the BCCI, there is some sort of line of communication between them and Shefali. Because for a lot of players, they're not going to come out and say, hey, you know what? I'm just struggling a little bit with, you know, work-life balance and you know, just having this sense of emotional equanimity. You know, a lot of players are not going to come out and say that, especially at that age. So, you know, as a fan, I'd love to see as much. I want to watch Shefali bat right now. I want to watch her bat tomorrow and the day after.
No. Right? Yeah, I get you. I completely get you. And I'm assuming all of this is under some sort of communication, open communication, not just, hey, you know, your ticket to Australia, here it is. Not listening to what the players have to say, of course. That goes without saying. And I really hope that's happening.
Yeah, no doubt. So next one, you know, in honor of your cat, let's talk about Harmanpreet Kaur. It's been a very short tournament for her. Just the 3 games, you know, getting injured as well. 104 runs, she struck at 109 or 1.09 runs per ball. I don't think those stats are very surprising for anyone, given the way that Harmanpreet Kaur plays. What do you make of her tournament so far? And what do you just, in general, what do you make of Harmanpreet Kaur as a T20 player?
Oof, what a question. I think first, her tournament so far, the first match, you know, we said it was Manchester Originals versus Oval Invincibles, I think. And she made maybe 1/3 of her entire tournament's runs in that match. And we said, whoa, Harman, 29 of 16. Well, hello, welcome back to T20 format. You know, this is the Harman we know, blah, blah, blah. And kind of sunk a little from there. We said, okay, a couple of matches, whatever. Injuries come back, you know. I think Manchester Originals as a team as well consist of more of the older experienced players in terms of Minyan Dupriya, Lizelle Lee, Kate Cross, Harman, and so on. So I feel like, you know, they missed out because of that little bit of lack of youth, lack of firepower, lack of energy. Harman missing out didn't help their case at all. I think for Harman's 100 tournament, it was something she won't really look back on and say, you know, that was fun. I think she probably had fun. The experience is nice, but the contributions are missing out. And that sentence has sort of been the story of Harman for the past few years. You know, she had that, we talk about that 171 not out, and then we talk about 100 versus New Zealand in the T20 World Cup, and then that's about it. We don't really talk about anything else. That's what we talk about. So it's time. I feel like it's time we have something new to talk about for Harman, something positive, something that we say, you know, that's the Harman we know. I think Harry, my cat, would love that. She'd love some reputation back. I think, yeah, that's, you know, what else is there to say? I think injury, she pulled out of the tournament then. It's been one that's been a little disappointing, but then again, not very unpredictable, right? We knew this was sort of lingering. We knew it was happening. Her form hasn't been great. Still isn't that great. We, again, all we can do is hope that it becomes great. But if it isn't, then we'll be having this conversation at the end of September saying, yeah, wasn't great, still isn't great. What's happening? What's the future? At one point, does her captaincy become dispensable, right? Because we talk about Harman, she's the captain, she has to be in the team. But after a point, if you're not contributing, how valuable is that captaincy? Can somebody else replace you and also make runs? That question suddenly starts popping up. It's a bit of a dangerous question. It's something that we don't want to think about, we try to avoid, but it's coming. And it's coming to us a little faster than we'd like to hope. So I'm hoping that, yeah, Harman kind of turns it around. Injury problems just stay away. And we see a reformed sort of Harman like we have seen before. And yeah, it comes soon.
It's interesting you raised the point about captaincy as well. At least in the T20 format, if Harman's not captain, who's next in line for you? I guess Smriti Mandhana would be the obvious choice, but you just don't really want that to... You don't want the burden of captaincy, not just with Smriti, but just any player. Yeah. You don't want that bringing their, you know, just bringing them down and being this weight on their shoulder. So who'd be captain other than Harman?
Yeah, that's a fair point. But then the counterpoint is that captaincy for Harman has also brought her form down. It might not actually be the captaincy, but she is the captain and she isn't performing. So if we make somebody else the captain and they don't perform, it's just another Harman that we have, right? So I think it comes down to, is captaincy the thing that's affecting her? Or is it external? Is it, you know, overpressure on her body? Is she just getting burnt out? Is it just the injury that isn't going away? So maybe if we define the problem of her not scoring runs, I think, you know, is she struggling in the nets? If not, then clearly she is in good touch. It's just the pressure of something that's getting to her in the middle. If she's not performing well in the nets, then clearly it's maybe an injury or something, some lack of confidence somewhere. So I think if Harman were to be out of the 11 and we put captaincy in someone else, I think it'll be Smriti personally, but I hope it's divided in such a way that, you know, if we have Shikha Pandey as one of the senior players in our team, we have more than one voice on the team. I feel like maybe with Harman as captain, Smriti doesn't talk that much, but if Smriti is captain, we'll have a couple of others talking more. And I want to see that leadership group and not a leader individual. And yeah, if we see that, I feel like the burden won't get too much to affect their cricketing skills as well.
Do you feel with someone like Harman, her less than ideal returns, that there's almost a systemic cause for it? You know, we keep talking about the depth in Indian women in Indian women's cricket and how that relates to, once again, we're going to come back to it, you know, the lack of a women's IPL. And that circular argument that there's not enough depth for a women's IPL, but you need the women's IPL to create depth in this team. And I just feel like if there was a lot more depth in women's cricket and there was a women's IPL to facilitate this, you know, there'd be more pressure on the senior pros for their spot in the team.
Yeah.
And, you know, it would either light a fire under, you know, under Harmanpreet Kaur, you know, start scoring runs, be that dominant player we know you can be, or someone else is going to come and take your place, you know, and whether or not that makes her raise her game, or this new person comes in and, you know, they become a reliable option in the middle order. But we just don't have that. That's just not an option. If Harmanpreet Kaur, if tomorrow we wake up and Harmanpreet Kaur is not in the 11, that's a massive hole to fill.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think anyone can really fill that hole right now, whether it's T20 cricket or 50 over cricket, right?
Exactly right. And that's why she's still in the 11 consistently, is because she is currently indispensable. We need to sort of come to a stage where every player is dispensable in a good way, in terms of there is competition. I think with Australia as well, you know, if a player doesn't perform, they'll be replaced. That kind of a thing. And we need to reach a point where people are fighting for the spots. As you mentioned, the fire. And when I'm introducing people to the Indian women's team, you know, be it football, be it cricket, whatever, when I'm saying, you know, here is a set of really amazing women and look where they are right now, it all stems down to the fire in their belly. They've come from small towns. They've come from towns where there are no women's academies, barely, you know, boys' academies. They've come beating all the obstacles despite the system. The fire in their belly is what they work off. They don't know anything else. You need to have that fire in your belly to perform. They've done that all their lives. And I think that fire in their belly comes from competition. If there's no one standing behind you saying, I'm going to displace you right now, you don't have that aggression. You don't have that literally fire burning in your belly. And that's what you need. I think they really thrive off that. And I'm hoping we sort of get to that point where they're looking over their shoulder and saying, you know, I need to beat that girl, otherwise she's going to take my spot. And, you know, that could be leadership-wise, that could be batting, bowling, fielding, whatever it is. But at this point, we don't want to be in a place where we have a person on the field just because they're the captain and they're indispensable because of their leadership qualities, but they might not contribute too much, or what potentially they could contribute, they aren't contributing, because that's then like just a body on the field. We need a well-developed person who will contribute whatever the phase of the match, whatever innings, X, Y, Z. And I feel like Harman was that person. You know, she could bowl, she could bat. She's a great fielder. But I think one sort of skill has dipped a little bit, and confidence has affected the other skills as well. So she's kind of grasping onto captaincy at this point. And I'm hoping somehow with, you know, India converting tight matches into wins, she gets confidence back in her captaincy, and that sort of domino effects into her cricketing skills, her batting, her bowling, her fielding. Apart from watching Shefali right now, I think my dream would be to just get peak Harman back. She has a few years left in her. We know that. It's just a question of confidence.
Absolutely, no doubt. And on the topic of fire, let's talk about Deepti Sharma, the source of your favorite meme on Twitter.
I love her.
It's, you know, it's no surprise that we're talking about her last. I feel like this happens a lot with Deepti Sharma, right? She tends to fly below the radar, despite being a regular starter for India across formats. You know, maybe not one of the first names on the team sheet, but she's always on the team sheet without fail, right? And, you know, the tournament, the kind of tournament she's had, you know, usually batting in the lower middle order, but with the ball, she's been absolutely fabulous, right? Just reading out some of the stats. We have Alice Capsey, Amanda Jade Wellington, and Lindsay Smith conceding 0.87, 0.88, and 0.89 runs per ball. And Deepti Sharma right up there with them at 0.9 runs per ball. She's taken 8 wickets so far in 7 games. But here's the thing. Unlike those other three names, she bowls more overs in the first 25 and the last 25 than any of those, right? So you design a team of the tournament. Of course, you're going to have Amanda Jade Wellington, just an absolute wizard so far in the 100. You're going to have her, and yep, you got to have Deepti Sharma. The role that she plays at any phase of the game just has to be the most versatile bowler in the competition so far. What do you make of Deepti Sharma, the 100 that she's had so far? And yes, just in general, what do you make of Deepti Sharma?
Yeah, you know, forget the Kohinoor or whatever it is. She's the Indian treasure. She's something that we just have to keep. We have to protect. We have to nurture. Whatever. Again, I feel like a player is most complete where whatever the phase of the game, whatever innings, that player can contribute something. And that's Deepti. You know, I think this tournament, Deepti and Heather Knight's captaincy has really gelled well. Heather Knight knows exactly how to deal with young players, knows how to deal with really good players, and what comes with, you know, bowling her where, as you mentioned, Deepti's bowled at the beginning of the innings, at the end of the innings. It's been Heather Knight sort of, you know, throwing bowlers here and there, saying, okay, you go here, you go there. And she's used Deepti really well. She recognizes Deepti's value and her versatility. Deepti has won London Spirit games with bat as well, and not that crazy 92 not out type of batting, but we're in a hole and I'm going to do a single double to get out of that hole. She has done that. I mean, it's just, you know, what do you say? I just cannot believe we've got such a gem. We've got a player who absolutely flies under the radar. You know, She still says only a couple of words in a press conference, and we've got Jemmy on the sideline sort of, you know, translating stuff out for her. But again, you think about it, a youngster who isn't strong in English. I feel like I keep coming back to this because this is a massive thing. I think about myself, if I was playing in a league in Spain or something and I don't know Spanish at all, like, what the hell? What's going to happen to me? I don't know what the captain is saying. I don't know what's happening. But obviously, Deepti understands everything, and she's confident in her own skills. She's got this quiet maturity about her. And look, if you're depicting your personality, her language is cricket. And I absolutely love to see what she's brought to the 100. Again, another sort of, I told you so, BCCI. You know, this is what I'm up to. I think again, you know, the 100 has been going on for some 4 weeks now. BCCI women could have tweeted about all the Indians doing crazy things up there in England. They had one tweet. I'm happy that that one tweet was about Deepti Sharma because she deserves it all. Really special to see her ring the bell at Lord's on day four. But look, yeah, she's this mystery ball sort of character. You know, you don't know what she's up to. You don't know what's going on in that head. The way she bowls, the way she bats, the way she feels, you think that she's like this fiery, intense player. And then you kind of, you know, have her in an interview and she's going like, yeah, I was just sticking to my skills and it paid off. And, you know, she's so soft-spoken. It's like, she's so lovable. And yeah, I'm just hoping she never retires. That would be awesome.
Absolutely. It's so great to see players like that who are all fire, all energy, in your face on the field. But once you walk past that boundary rope, it's all good. It's all chill. And yeah, like you say, Deepti Sharma, I've got to say, I can't think of too many other people in world cricket who do as much with as little. And I mean this in the most respectful way. You know, Deepti Sharma, she's not a swashbuckler. She's not going to hit, you know, three sixes in a row. You know, she doesn't really clear the ropes, but she makes the best of what she has as a batter. Her decision-making, you know, her game awareness as well in tough positions. You look at her strike rate and it's not gonna blow your mind, 113. But we have to remember that she's batting almost exclusively in the middle overs and a little bit at the death in the last 25 balls.
Yeah.
And to maintain that sort of strike rate in that phase, it's pretty commendable. And you go beyond the numbers and you just look at the game situation as well. I think she got a 30-odd a few games ago. I think it was 34 not out to guide the London Spirit home. And like you said, she's won games with the bat. She's won games with the ball. She's flown under the radar. And I have to say, I was quite skeptical, to be honest, before the 100 about, you know, the London Spirit picking up Deepti Sharma. I have been proved wrong and proved wrong quite comprehensively. I think we can say that for sure. Deepti Sharma, she's had a really good, really, really good competition. So a fun way to end with Deepti Sharma. And
yeah, absolutely. I think Deepti is the only Indian we can say who contributed with more than just the bat, right? And we haven't seen that too much. We've seen Deepti with the ball, which, again, we always talk about, I think, in cricket, batters getting all the glory. Even if, you know, I think yesterday the bowlers in the test match versus England were exceptional. And then KL Rahul ended up winning player of the match, which I feel like, yeah, great century at Lord's, good and all. But, like, you know, your bowlers really, really did the deed there. And I think for Deepti to put out that performance with the ball, I think just as a captain, I'm thinking of what's going on in Heather Knight's mind. Next time England face India, she's going to be really wary of Deepti. She's going to say, you know, I was in the team with that girl and I was the captain that time. And, you know, she will contribute each time she has the bat or the ball in hand. So we really have to make a plan around her, how to get her out, maybe how to not get out on her bowling. So when you become a threat like that, that's the best, right? You've become a threat in the eyes of your opponent, and that makes you a great player. And I feel like Deepti, this was sort of her breakout in terms of playing overseas, playing without any other Indians. And I say this because I feel like it is a big deal to play as the sole Indian in your team. It's not very common that the Indians have that. You know, with Elise Perry, with Danny Wyatt, they've played around the world. They've done that multiple times, but our youngsters haven't. And this is a great first platform for them to do that. And then hopefully make it more and more prevalent in the coming years. But look, Deepti, you know, all eyes on her. I think that's how it's always been. All eyes on Deepti, but she just doesn't feel it at all. She doesn't care who's watching. She'll just do her thing. And yeah, it's awesome to see.
Do you think Deepti Sharma would be, I'm just theorizing here, I feel like she'd be a fantastic signing in the WBBL. Sometimes you do get longer boundaries in the WBBL, just larger fields. So that just means she's going to go for fewer runs. She could go for fewer runs. And, you know, we might see more of those twos and threes as a batter. If you're a WBBL franchise, are you looking, how closely should you be looking at Deepti Sharma?
If you weren't, you absolutely are now, because class player, you know, going to contribute. Again, her specialty is these single double triples. And with a little bit of a bigger boundary, her eyes just going to light up. She's like, you know, this is the place for me. Here's Harry. But I feel like Deepti in any team at any point in whatever format at this moment is an asset. And if we're not making use of that asset, you know, I don't know what we're up to. Again, another cry to the BCCI saying, here are what your players are up to, you know, wake up a little bit. I really hope that she signs for a team in the WBBL, more action to watch her Indian stars in. And yeah, I think Indians haven't played versus or with a lot of Australians in the 100. It'll be nice to see what they get up to down under as well. Let's see what the future holds.
Absolutely. And I think Harry can actually read your mind. We started talking about Shefali, and I think Harry just knew, oh my God, you know what? Radha loves Shefali. I'm going to jump up on the screen. We start talking about Deepti. Harry's all over the screen once again.
Yeah, she knows.
I mean, it's been great having, Harry and you on the podcast.
So
No, but
thank you.
In all seriousness, it's been great, you know, doing another episode with you, Radha. Maybe we should do a third episode as well.
What a concept, Jay. I love it. I'm in. I will buy another mic for that.
You can run out of money, Radha.
I know, but it's worth it. No, this has been fantastic. Look, I think the conversation with you is always different. It's always intriguing. We always segue into rants, which is desperately needed in any women's cricket conversation. But yeah, let's see how our bet goes tonight. And yeah, I'm looking forward to coming back. So you better invite me back.
Thank you for listening. You can find us on Twitter and Facebook at All Over Crick. All Over Cricket features articles and podcasts from contributors spread across the world. We provide fans with original and engaging content that reflects the truly global and gender-inclusive sport that we believe cricket should be. Please share this episode and tell your friends about All Over Cricket.